Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
A very good morning to Associate Professor of Genetics and Clinical Research at University of KwaZulu-Natal, Professor Colleen Eldos. Good morning. Thanks for being available to chat to us again about ivermectin. This is becoming more and more perplexing. Please explain it to us.
I think we're also waiting for an explanation. I'm beginning to think the word SAPRA is actually an contraction of soap opera.
It's bizarre. It's bizarre that nobody even understands what they come out with this ruling that we can use ivermectin under certain circumstances, but then don't say what they are.
Well, they have.
Oh.
But let us go back.
Okay, go back.
To look at this, the history of the communications around ivermectin from SAPRA. On the 22nd of December, they came out with a letter saying it's illegal and you will be arrested if you're found with this drug. And this lovely little bit of mis or disinformation, whichever it was, that ivermectin can actually cause death. So as the IIG, the ivermectin interest group, we wrote a letter to SAPRA to say that's not true. This is a very safe drug. And by effectively banning it, we're not going to achieve much. So it's a drug that we should be considering. So that, along with, I think, pressure from other groups, got them to state on the 6th of January that they would entertain Section 21 applications. So that was the 6th of January. Mm-hmm. And as the IIG, we spent up until the 15th of January with several people, specialists in writing regulatory documents, creating a Section 21 application for all doctors in South Africa for all patients. So it was a bulk application. We got all the details from a manufacturer overseas. We got all the details about how it would come into the country, how it would be warehoused. We dotted the I's and crossed all the T's. So that was 2 weeks ago, Friday 2 weeks ago, and on the Monday they engaged with us and we thought, wow, this is wonderful. And they asked us for information through that week, and the last communication we had with them was the following Thursday. And then nothing more, and then we heard there was going to be a press conference last Wednesday. So we managed to get, and some of us managed to get invitations to the press conference. And we were cautiously optimistic.
Wait, so you weren't actually invited and told that this is happening, even though you've been back and forth with the with them?
Yeah, we weren't. But friends in the press managed to give us the link, and we got to hear it.
Right.
And they spent the good first half of their time dissing the research that we've presented or that everybody's presented. They seem to have an absolute blinker to any research that is not a large randomized controlled trial that's done in a developed world country. There are 35 studies already published on ivermectin, of which 17 of those are randomized controlled studies that have come from across the globe. There's no way these people communicated with each other. There are people who have put those studies together in meta-analyses to show that ivermectin definitely has a positive impact when treating COVID, both from the morbidity and the mortality point of view. Anyway, they spent a lot of time saying there's not enough evidence for them to make a decision. And then we had a heartfelt announcement by Dr. Sametti saying she's heard us and they feel for us and they understand, and therefore they're going to give us controlled compassionate access. So we thought, having seen how difficult it is to get a Section 21 application through, get all the information required, that having seen our plight, they would have made some concession into how we would apply. So we waited with bated breath until Thursday when the document came through, and there's no change. It's still Section 21, but now every time a doctor fills out a Section 21, they've got to send off SMSs to say they've done this. Now, I mean, there could be well over 1,000 applications a day going in for ivermectin. How is SAPRA going to cope with this? And for every one of those that gets filled in by a doctor, maybe one or two patients can't be seen because there are only so many hours in a day that a doctor can work. And the cost involved, I think it's 300 or it's 500 rand per patient. So every single document would be, have to be accompanied by this fee of 300 or 500 rand. And I keep thinking about those gogos who live in very rural areas getting sick. How are they going to do this? How are we going to get ivermectin to them to get them through COVID with these kind of stringent hurdles that have been put in place?
What doesn't make sense to me is we can be very proud of our medical teams, our standard of medicine in South Africa, the quality of our doctors and our training. Why is it when we've got a well-known drug, albeit in maybe different, for different applications until now, but we haven't had COVID until now. Why can't the doctors be empowered to make the decision as to if they would like to use it in consultation either with a patient or the patient's family? Why have we disempowered our medical teams from doing that? I mean, we aren't debating whether remdesivir should be used or not. When somebody has COVID, they'll talk to the doctor and he will make recommendations. You could ask about other drugs. You have this discussion and somebody gets treated. Mm-hmm. Why is it that they have become, why have they removed the ability from our medical teams to make these medical decisions? What lies behind it? It's bizarre.
Yeah. It is bizarre, and it's all red tape. And I'm beginning to feel that the red tape is being used as an excuse. I mean, if you look at the history of scientific rigor, because they keep pleading that we don't have adequate research behind this, it's because they will not look at the research in its totality. But in 1942, one lady was given penicillin, the first penicillin ever given to anybody. The next year, about 100 odd people were given it to test it over a larger group of people. By 1944, 2 years later, the entire Allied forces had access to this. Wounded soldiers were getting access to penicillin. But since the Second World War, things have tightened up and they've created this thing called the double-blind randomized control study for very, very good reason. We do not want people abused. We've had things like the Tuskegee trial where people weren't given the penicillin for syphilis because the scientists wanted to see what happened. They wanted to see the natural history of syphilis. We get to the 80s when somebody discovers that stomach ulcers are caused by a bacterium. It takes 10 years before there's a treatment for that. People were still using the old treatments for ulcers. And so people have stuck behind this 20th century rigor. We're now in the 21st century. We've got to start looking at research in totality, not just those randomized control studies that you fancy looking at because they fit in with your paradigm of the first world. There's been so much snobbism about some of these trials that have come through the developed world. And the reason they've come from the developed world is because the developing world, I mean, is that that's where they had the drug. The drug hasn't been available in the first world because the parasitic diseases the drug is meant to treat don't exist there. So if you ask me why, the only thing I can think of is a blindness to looking at a totality of research, not looking at how to use common sense in an emergency situation and red tape. And maybe even using red tape as an excuse. Mm.
It seems to be almost also a disconnect from reality that this is happening in office buildings, not in the wards, not seeing people on the ground that are suffering and where alternatives are sought. It just doesn't make sense. Of course, the other problem, well, there are a number of problems. Number one is that we keep having these conversations rather than new conversations about different things. This takes up an immense amount of people's time, whereas it shouldn't be that. And number two, of course, is the fact that we all know that there has suddenly developed this massive underground market for ivermectin. Over the weekend, people were arrested at OR Tambo with 6 million rands worth of the medication. Everybody knows people who are already taking it from a prophylaxis, from a prophylaxis perspective. And that's even more dangerous because that is not supervised. As Dr. Anton Marburg said yesterday, there are side effects. People can get unexplained fevers, which could confuse symptoms around COVID. It needs to be controlled. It needs to be measured and managed by professionals and not by an underground market, surely.
Absolutely. And if a patient has got some sort of parasitic disease and you don't know about it, say they've just got worms, that they're farmers, and so they've got worms. If you give them ivermectin, they're going to respond, the parasites are going to respond, and you're not going to know whether they're getting sick with COVID when they've tested positive or not. I mean, this is something that should be in the hands of the medical profession. It's a Schedule 3 drug. And yes, with SAHPRA not enabling doctors to use the drug, there's going to be an invitation to anarchy, and people will use whatever they can put their hands on.
Yeah, it is. It's really just remarkable, because this underground market is very, very, very dangerous. In fact, unsigned, a doctor has just sent me this, saying, here are some of the prices that were quoted in my research questionnaire doing the rounds: 100 rand for 50 mils, 300 rand for 50 mils, 350 for 50 mils, just over 200 rand for 20 mils, 450. You know, here's it's a whole list. 1,000 rand for 10 tablets, 1,000 rand for 12 milligram tablets. And there's, of course, the dangerous thing here is it's the drug trade. You don't know if it's a genuine product. You don't know what you should be taking, and you don't know if you should even be taking it at all. This is very, very dangerous.
Yes, taking it with various other medications could be a problem. And if you've got anything that endangers the blood-brain barrier, you should not be touching ivermectin. And people don't even think about that. Self-medication is dangerous with scheduled drugs. There's a reason why these drugs are scheduled. But if SAHPRA does not enable doctors to prescribe this drug and quickly, then there is going to be this continued underground movement of the drug. And in my first interview on High FM earlier this year, I pointed out how many people would be dead at the end of January that needn't have been. So we lost, I think it was over 400, or there are 4,500 new infections over the weekend. If we had ivermectin earlier in the month, then maybe that would have been halved. Maybe it would only have been 2,000. So this treading water and playing games with the public is not helping those people on the ground. And that's why this underground movement is going to continue.
Very, very dangerous and very, very concerning. But we'll keep checking in. What do you think is going to happen now? I mean, are there next steps?
Well, as the IIG, we're sending a letter to SAHPRA this morning asking them why they have not responded since the week before last to our application. We reminded them last week. They then said that we hadn't submitted anything. They had not received anything. We've got evidence that they have received it. So we put all that evidence together. And as the IIG, we are putting this application in again. And in their guidelines last week, they said they would give a 24-hour turnaround. Well, if we remind them today, their 24-hour turnaround should give us permission by tomorrow. Other lobby groups are going the legal route again. They might have stopped that had there been some sincerity behind the offer to allow ivermectin to be prescribed. But we're not going to go the legal route at the moment, but other lobby groups are. We're just going to try and engage with SAHPRA using science and using professional common sense and reasoning to try and get this drug available.
And that's unfortunately where we do have to leave it. Thank you for your time, and thanks for all the work that you are doing. That is Associate Professor, Geneticist and Clinical Researcher at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, Professor Colleen Aldous.
High FM, your station of choice since 2008.